It's time for the Greater Buffalo Sports Hall of Fame Inductee Spotlight Show. Brought to you by David Adams Card World, Canal Bank, and Osaic Wealth. Now, here's your host, Howard Simon.
And a happy Saturday morning to you. It's a beautiful day today. We're going to be in the upper 60s. The sun is shining. The Bills are going to thrash Tennessee tomorrow. The Mets season is still alive. It's a great day to be alive, folks. And welcome to the Greater Buffalo Sports Hall of Fame Induction Show, the fourth and final show that we have leading up to this year's induction ceremony and dinner, which, by the way, is 24 days away. The 34th annual induction ceremony and dinner will be Tuesday, November 12th at the Buffalo Niagara Convention Center. And tickets are on sale right now. If you'd like to go, you can purchase an individual ticket. You can purchase a table of 10. Maybe you know one of the honorees, one of the inductees, and you'd like to be there for this big night. You can find information about that at gbshof.com. You can also read about the entire class, which we have been telling you about over the course of these shows. gbshof.com to purchase your tickets. You can also make a donation to the all-important Amateur Sports Development Fund. Again, that's at gbshof.com. And and the silent auction, which I will tell you about over the course of the show as well. You'll find a link when you go to the website to place a bid on some amazing items in the silent auction. Again, I'll tell you a little bit more about that. But let's get to a break. And guess what? My alma mater is first up, Buffalo State, and an outstanding basketball player at Buff State, and outstanding in terms of community involvement. We will focus on Cecily Owens when we start our lineup of guests in a moment on WGR.
Now back to the Greater Buffalo Sports Hall of Fame Inductee Spotlight Show, presented by David Adams Card World, Canal Bank, and Osaic Wealth. Once again, here's Howard Simon.
Let me tell you a little bit about our first guest before we get to Cecily Owens, a standout athlete at South Park High School in basketball and volleyball, went on to Buffalo State, then Buffalo State College, and starred for the women's basketball team. A quick note on that, because I was actually a student at Buff State when Cecily was starring for Gail Maloney and some outstanding women's basketball teams for the Bengals. Set 19 records on the court. Then went into education with the Buffalo Public Schools, teacher, program coordinator, assistant principal. Was named the district's first assistant superintendent of physical education, health, and athletics in 2020, and she is currently principal at West Hurdle Academy, number 94. And we're also going to talk about her community involvement. She founded GIRLS, G-I-R-L-S, Sports Foundation. It stands for Goals, Integrity, Respect, Leadership, and Sports. And they have a number of things they do, including a mentoring program and summer camps and clinics. And Cecily is going into the Greater Buffalo Sports Hall of Fame, and she's joining us right now. Cecily, it's Howard Simon. Good morning, and congratulations on this wonderful honor.
Well, thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it very much. It's such an honor. Thank you.
When you got the call and you had a chance to kind of reflect on the news, what are some of the things that went through your mind?
Well, I remember getting the call. I was actually at work and in the halls, and I got a call. I answered the phone, and he told me I was being inducted, and I was just speechless, smiling, tears rolled down my face with gratitude, and it was such a shock that I got the call. I didn't expect it at all, so it was amazing. I was with a couple of people, and, you know, they're like, what's wrong? I'm like, I just got this call. I'm being inducted into the Greater Buffalo Sports Hall of Fame. And after that, you know, we just celebrated.
Do you have, I mean, I know you can't name everybody, but one of the things I like to talk about with the inductees is, you know, when they get the call, there's a tendency to think about all the people that had such a tremendous impact on your life. You think about them in a moment like this, where you receive an honor like this. Are there a few people, some people you'd like to talk about who've had like the biggest impact on you?
Sure. First and foremost, I'd like to thank God for just for being ahead of my life. So nothing happens without God. I thought of my family also, they're very supportive. They've always been supportive of my dreams and aspirations. So I thought of them. I thought of my coach from Buff State, Dr. Gail Maloney. And I also thought about the JFK Community Center, a place where I frequented when I was a young girl, learning how to play basketball and pool and ping pong. So I thought of JFK and those people who were instrumental in my life at that time, some mentors that I had growing up. And I also thought of Bridget Nyland, who's also gone mm-hmm. into the Greater Buffalo Sports Hall of Fame. She has been one of my mentors recently, and she's taught me a lot about education and sports and the not-for-profit sector.
Do you have, let me go to Buff State first, and then we'll talk about your career in education and your foundation as well. When you think back to your time playing for Gale and some of those teams at Buff State in the early 80s, what are some of your top memories that might come back?
Wow. Some of my top memories are the relationships that I established and continue to have currently. We became a close-knit family, the players, the coaches that I played under, Don O'Brien and Barbara Riemann, you know, they really taught me a lot about the game. You know, I thought I knew how to play basketball when I got to college. But after, you know, working with a program that was detailed and organized and learning plays and running plays, that was an eye-opening experience. So once I got a grasp on that, things kind of took off. So those memories still stand today.
So after you get done, you eventually end up getting into the field of education, working in the Buffalo Public Schools. Was education your major, Cecily? Is that something you wanted to do?
Yeah, so I've always wanted to be a teacher. Growing up as a young girl, my mom was in education for years, and I always wanted to be a teacher, and went to Buff State, and was a great school for teaching, and got my certification in education. Yes.
I've always had a great deal of respect for teachers because I've seen how they can affect so many kids' lives over the years. How rewarding did you find? I'm sure there are days it was challenging, but how rewarding did you find or do you find working in education and having that ability to help shape lives?
Well, I like to put this disclaimer out, if you don't mind. I recently retired from the Buffalo Public Schools almost 2 months ago after having 33 years in education. But it's always been a rewarding job just to see you make a positive impact on students and their families alike. And also building those relationships with your colleagues, your teachers, and the community members. Very rewarding job.
When you were when you founded the physical education program, what was the state of it? Was there any? Was that all something you had to kind of really dig in and build from scratch? What was going on at that time?
You mean when I found it? I'm sorry.
The physical education, when you were named the superintendent, physical education, okay. Health, and athletics. What? I'm sorry, it wasn't founded, but your foundation I'll get to in a second. What was the program like, and what were some of the things you needed to do when you got into that role?
Well, one of the things that I felt that I needed to do was put some systems and structures in place that were already there, just kind of reimagine and re-envision some things that was going on in the athletic department, and really kind of a shifting of focus onto girls sports.
So you end up founding the Girls Sports Foundation in 2007. I mentioned a little bit about it, but why don't you tell everybody a little bit more about what that foundation was set up to do?
Yeah, so as a young girl, as I stated before, you know, I had mentors and people supporting me through all my younger years with sports and mentoring. So I felt the need to give back what was freely given to me and decided to have a basketball clinic one day. My sister, Carlette, who's also the co-founder of the Girls Sports Foundation, we were chatting. I said, I would like to have a basketball clinic. I reached out to the city of Buffalo to secure a venue. And on that day, April 14th, 2007, 90 girls came to this clinic, and which was a mind-blowing experience. So from since that day, we've been going strong, really pouring back into these young girls' lives within the city of Buffalo with sports participation and mentoring.
In what ways, Cecily, do you think the mentoring program can have an impact on young girls?
Yeah, so girls, I believe that young ladies need to see people working very closely with them that actually look like them. And so we deal with a lot of girls who struggle with low self-esteem and self-confidence. And, you know, we teach them a variety of things centered around those topics through sports participation.
When you look back, do you ever, like you just mentioned, what girls need to see, do you consider yourself or did you consider yourself a role model or someone that, you know, is inspiring to others?
Yes, I do see myself as a role model that's inspiring to other young ladies. I grew up in the city of Buffalo, downtown Buffalo, and at sometimes things were very challenging. There were barriers. I see that in our girls today, and I want to be a role model and provide some recommendations and suggestions on how to get through obstacles and barriers so they can live their lives to the fullest.
Where we are today in 2024 and where you were coming out of South Park High School and going to Buff State, are there opportunities for girls now that just did not exist when you grew up?
Oh, definitely. You know, with the Title IX being in place, you know, to address issues like equity and education and sports and the workforce, there are definitely opportunities, more opportunities now. And even with the WNBA, I mean, that's going on right now and just really giving women and females the opportunity to play sports and get some of those items that were not in place before. The equity piece is important, and access and opportunities.
Well, Cecily, congratulations on your retirement, by the way, and congratulations on your induction into the Greater Buffalo Sports Hall of Fame, and thanks very much for coming on with us this morning.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much for having me.
My pleasure.
Have a great day.
Thank you, you too. I forgot to mention that Cecily is also in the Buffalo State Athletic Hall of Fame. Back in 1998, she became the first female African-American to be inducted into the Buff State Athletic Hall of Fame. I mentioned the silent auction. Before we go to break here, you can get your tickets at gbshof.com. You can also place a bid on some of these great items. A lot of sports items, but it's not just sports items. There are some music items. There's a trip to Waikiki you can bid on. If you're a Yankee fan, tons of Yankee stuff. Man, there is stuff from Aaron Judge. There's stuff from Derek Jeter. We've got, let's see, Pete Rose. There's a hand-signed stat jersey from now the late Pete Rose. There's a jersey from Steph Curry. Bill stuff, Josh Allen stuff, Terrell Bernard. Let's see, I've left out Wade Boggs. I don't know if I always consider Wade Boggs more of a Red Sox than a Yankee, but whatever. Don Mattingly, there's some, let's see, Dalton Kincaid, Bruce Smith. There's a lot of autographed stuff here. As I mentioned, there's an Adam Sandler, Happy Gilmore hand-signed jersey. That's pretty cool. What else? The Eagles. Oh, I forgot. Yeah, music. You can bid on a chance to see the Eagles play at the Sphere in Las Vegas, or I believe they're in residence now. There is a 6-day, 5-night vacation for two to Waikiki. If you win the bid, I can absolutely take it off your hands if you don't feel like, you know, it's a long plane trip to Hawaii, and maybe you don't want to. Okay. Larry Bird, Mike Tyson, Gronk. We've got autographed jerseys from Gronk up there, from New England and from Tampa. So bid on these items. Again, the silent auction, and the proceeds will go to the Amateur Sports Development Fund, which is a very important fund that helps so many needy organizations here in Western New York in terms of sports. You can find a link to purchase tickets to the dinner Tuesday, November 12th, and to also bid on some of the items in the silent auction at gbshof.com. More of the 34th Annual Greater Buffalo Sports Hall of Fame Induction Show in a moment on WGR.
Now back to the Greater Buffalo Sports Hall of Fame Inductee Spotlight Show, presented by David Adams Card World, Canal Bank, and Osaic Wealth. Once again, here's Howard Simon.
Welcome back. We're going to talk a little bit about the Sabres here. Before we get to our next guest, we're going to be discussing Paul Wieland, who is posthumously being inducted in the Greater Buffalo Sports Hall of Fame. If you don't know who Paul is, well, if you're a fan of the Sabres, you should. But if you don't, he was actually a broadcast pioneer with the Buffalo Sabres. He was a big part of their game broadcast being on local cable back in the 1970s. He developed the very first post-game show. He went on to serve as public. He was their first public relations director, later director of communications for the Sabres. And I know, again, when I was at Buff State in the early 80s, he was very famous for putting out prank press releases. I think everybody probably remembers the press release that had the Sabres drafting a hockey player by the name of Taro Tsujimoto, who, of course, never really existed. I thought there was one about the ships downtown sailing them up to Toronto to blow up the Maple Leafs or something like that. Ronald Reagan had made the Sabres America's team. There was a press release for that as well. These were all April Fool's jokes. And back then, the media fell for them. So it was pretty funny. Paul also created the Sabres Hall of Fame, and he introduced Sabretooth, the mascot of the Sabres, back in 1987. Paul passed away February of 2023 at the age of 84, and we are joined by his sister, Anne-Marie Jason, who is going to talk more about Paul Wieland. Anne-Marie, it's Howard Simon. Good morning. Welcome to the show. Thank you for coming on with us today.
Good morning, Howard, and I'm glad to be here today with my niece, Caitlin Bauer, who is Paul's youngest daughter. And she's going to fill everybody in on the exciting lifestyle of Paul Wieland.
Okay, well, I'll tell you what. I'm not sure who wants to answer the first question, but Anne-Marie, if you want to, or Caitlin, if you want to both talk a little bit about this. I always do like to talk about what the honor means for people. Now, of course, Paul is going in posthumously, so this is more of a, what was the effect on the family? What was some of the reaction around the family, including both of you, when you heard Paul was going into the Hall of Fame?
Well, I was delighted to hear about it. He's a man who is so extraordinary, and we're all very proud of him. It was my niece, Karen, who first got the news, and sister-in-law, Betsy, and he has been the recipient of so many awards, and this one is just the icing on the cake.
Caitlin,
so I'm just very glad.
Sorry about that. Caitlin, what would you tell us? I mean, I was aware of who Paul was, but I never really got to know him personally. So for folks who didn't know of Paul personally, what would you tell us about him?
Oh, gosh. I would say he had a great combination of utter goofiness and weirdness and very instinctive intelligence, I would say. I very much inherited my sense of humor from my dad, but we're very different. He was big into very slapstick comedy, a lot of wordplay, some of the weird things that he would do, in terms of marketing and PR. That was pretty much run of the mill for him. He always was thinking of some kind of new, slightly envelope pushing prank or, ways to pull one over on people, even well into, his final act of his professional career, St. Bonaventure.
Do in terms of like I know he was famous for the April Fool's press releases with the Sabres. Do either of you know the backstory about how that came about? What inspired him to do that? And people bought those hook, line, and sinker. I mean, what was his reaction when people thought they were legit? I thought I read where the owners of the Sabres at the time asked him when the Japanese hockey player was coming over.
So I'll have to pass that one over to Anne-Marie for a little more specifics, as that was before my time. But in modern parlance, I think I would say that my dad just really enjoyed being a little bit of a troll. he would have, if his career were in, the internet heyday with the Sabres, definitely be, what they would call, an internet troll. He just liked doing it just for fun and for a laugh.
Anne-Marie, what can you add to that?
Oh, I can add a lot of chapters that are too long for this show. But Paul always was playing tricks and always had this marvelous sense of humor. My parents told a story about, and because Paul's 11 years older than I am, I wasn't around for this one, but they said when he was teeny tiny, he had this little game that was a I don't know, some sort of metal thing where you pulled on some levers and then the horses raced along. Mm-hmm. And then he would narrate it like it was like a real sports game.
Yeah.
This teeny tiny voice was coming out of the next room, and my parents said, "He's in there and he's doing a show."
He was there. I'm like, he was there at the very beginning, ladies. Did he talk much about what it was like to be there in the early years of the hockey franchise?
Well, it was very exciting for him. He talked a lot in general, but he did talk about how he really was so creative and innovative that his ideas, he was able to convince people of the Knox brothers, really,
yeah,
of how he should just be allowed to go ahead and invent things. And it was a lot of his push and drive that got the Sabres, and I'm not talking about the players, but just the idea of the Sabres as a team, to become popular in people's minds, radio, TV, and he just enthused all over the place about his ideas, and he made them happen.
Do you do either one of you know if he had a favorite prank, a favorite Sabres prank that he pulled?
Well, of course, the famous taro.
Taro, yeah.
Can I say?
Yep.
But the Slider X, the fake
ice. Yeah.
Right, the plastic ice. He loved it that people believed things. He just couldn't get over how people would actually believe his stuff when he would put things in that he thought were so patently absurd that he thought, how could people really believe this? But he was delighted that they did.
Yeah. It was hilarious at the time to see people buy it hook, line, and sinker. Again, I don't know who wants to, Anne Marie or Caitlin, who wants to handle this. I mean, obviously part of your dad's career included working, from my perspective as a broadcaster, with two giants of the industry, Ted Darling and Rick Jenrette. What was it like, or did he ever talk a little bit, or I don't know if either one of you would have met them. What was it like to work with those broadcasting legends?
Paul thought the world of both of those guys and had tremendous respect for them. Also loved to goof around with them. But he and Ted Darling were legendary in their connection with each other and the humor, and just almost could read each other's minds, I think, in some ways. I don't have as much to say about what he said about Rick Jenrette, other than that he thought he was a great guy. So I don't know if Caitlin has more to add to that. Do you, Kate?
Yeah, I know my dad. He, like, to echo everything Anne Marie said, he always, you know, spoke very fondly about Ted. Rick Jenrette did not come up in conversation as frequently, at least with me. But when he did, Dad would always he thought the world of him. He thought he was a tremendous announcer and just a wonderful person as well.
What made him want to get into teaching?
Well, I think it was kind of a little bit on accident. He had been living in Massachusetts for several years, running a public access channel, and did a lot of development with that. And his old friend, Lee Coppola, who at mm-hmm. the time was dean of the Giandoli School at Bonaventure,
yep.
Gave him a call and asked if he would consider moving back to Western New York and teaching. And he basically decided to do it as a favor to Lee, because he asked him. And I remember I was in high school at the time, and I remember he was very kind of a little almost intimidated about the idea of going into teaching, which I found very funny that he was intimidated by anything at all. But I it was a platform for him to have a great audience. And he was always very passionate about journalism and then about sports broadcasting, and was very proud of having a hand in shaping the next generation to do these things and do them well.
So at the dinner, ladies, who, in terms of family, who will get a chance to be there and be able to honor Paul that night with your attendance?
Paul's wife, Betsy, will be there proudly, as will Caitlin and Karen, who is Paul's middle daughter, Cynthia lives in New Jersey and has a business there, and she will not be with us. I will be there. And also Judy Fitzgerald, who has been a family friend for many years, and we'll all be there cheering and smiling.
Well, it's certainly a well-deserved honor, ladies, and congratulations to both of you and everyone in the family who have a chance to accept this honor on Paul's behalf. We do appreciate both of you coming on with us this morning.
Glad to be here.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. You guys have a nice day. Dinner's coming up Tuesday, November 12th. That is 24 days away. And if you'd like to go, if you'd like to find out, by the way, who else is going in, the whole class and all the information on everybody is listed at the website, gbshof.com. You can then buy your tickets for the dinner. Don't get shut out. It's always a very popular event. If you want to be there, make sure you get your tickets. That's at gbshof.com. And again, there are so many great items available in the silent auction. Make sure you click on that link and check out what's available and see if there's something you would like to place a bid on as well. Now, one of the things they've done in recent years is have a team of distinction. They are not inducted into the Buffalo Sports Hall of Fame, but these teams are honored. We had the great Sweet Home volleyball teams of Sally Kuss. Last year, it was the Plant Six softball teams. So there are different teams of distinction that are honored as well. The team of distinction this year is the St. Bonaventure men's basketball teams from 1967 to 1970. That includes the legendary Bob Lanier's career and the great Bonna teams, including the one that woulda, coulda, shoulda, made it to the Final Four, you know, Lanier's injury and all that stuff. We're going to speak with a member of those teams who is, by the way, in the Greater Buffalo Sports Hall of Fame when we come back on WGR.
Now back to the Greater Buffalo Sports Hall of Fame Inductee Spotlight Show, presented by David Adams Card World, Canal Bank, and Osaic Wealth. Once again, here's Howard Simon.
So the team of distinction is St. Bonaventure men's basketball from 1967 to 1970. In a moment, we're going to talk to Dale Tipas, who was on those squads, and he's going to join us in a second. But first, so the 67-68 Bonna team went 22-0 in the regular season. They were ranked number three nationally. I think one of the things, and I was reading about them, they averaged 86 points a game. Now, keep in mind, this is before there was a three-point shot. Freshmen, by the way, if you had a really talented freshman, like Calvin Murphy didn't play as a freshman for Niagara, freshmen were not allowed to play. And there was no shot clock. So in theory, if you're really good, the other team could hold the ball as long as possible to try and keep the score of the game down, and they still averaged 86 points. That season, of course, introduced everybody to Buffalo's own and future Hall of Famer Bob Lanier, who averaged 26 points and 15 rebounds as a sophomore. 69-70 season, of course, that was the one everybody knows about. One regular season loss into the NCAA tournament, wins over Davidson, North Carolina State, and then Villanova to make it to the Final Four. But in that Villanova win, of course, the season-ending knee injury to Bob Lanier. He did not play in the next game, which would have been against Jacksonville. And if, and we'll talk to Dale about this, I think a lot of Bonner fans always think that team would have beaten Jacksonville, and then they, in all likelihood, would have faced UCLA, the great UCLA and John Wooden, for a national championship in 1970. They are the team of distinction, and talking about them with us right now is Dale Tipas. Dale is a member of the Greater Buffalo Sports Hall of Fame, Class of 2014. Dale, it's Howard Simon. Good morning. Welcome to the show. Thanks for coming on with us today.
Good morning, Howard. Thank you for having me.
Nobody ever will forget those great Bonna teams. So it's not like, hey, it's nice that someone remembered us, because they are definitely remembered by everybody, any Bonna alum and sports fans in Western New York. Having said that, though, when you heard the team was being honored as the team of distinction, what was your first reaction?
Well, I think it was one of joy and happiness. Obviously, it was a great honor for the university. And it's a great honor for the guys that played during that three-year period. We had, obviously, as you just outlined, some terrific seasons. That 68 team could have easily, if we had had a couple extra players, because they played with that Iron Man 5 group during that season, that team possibly could have gone to the Final Four. But, ifs and buts.
Yeah. Well, when I mean, they won, and that's the main thing. But when you look back on those teams, what are there a few characteristics that stood out that made those teams so successful?
Well, obviously, the number one characteristic is we had Bob Lanier and nobody else did.
Yeah, that didn't hurt. Yeah,
that did not hurt. That was, you know, obviously that's a huge advantage. No pun intended there.
Yeah.
But Bob was, you know, Bob was a player that nobody else had. He could do everything. He could shoot from the outside. He was a great rebounder. He was big and strong. He dominated the inside. And he had the touch, a shooting touch of a guard, and he was just terrific. He could hook, he could throw left-hand hook, right-hand hook. You know, he was just a great player. Now, as a team, I think the you know, I can't speak to other teams. I can only speak to the teams that I played on. And the closeness, the camaraderie, the competitiveness of all those players, I think, was a huge advantage. And that's what drove, I think, us to the success we had. We were all successful in our high school programs, came to the university, and were willing to make changes. Because when you come from high school, you're probably All-State or you're All-City or you're all whatever. And you now come and play with 5, 6, 7, 8 other guys who are of equal talent. They're as good as you. Some are better than you. And you've got to be able to find your niche and be willing to accept your role in that environment. And I think the distinction of the teams that I played on and that 68 team is those players were all willing to do that.
I'm sure you're asked this question a gazillion times, so I'll make it a gazillion and one. You know what's coming. If Lanier doesn't get hurt, do you guys, you're going to beat Jacksonville and Artis Gilmore, right? And then you would play UCLA. You think you guys would have won a national title if you had a healthy Lanier?
Well, if I said no, everybody in Buffalo, all my good friends would be killing me. I don't think there's any question that, you know, Bob would have dominated both ends of the court regardless. Now, the UCLA team was terrific.
Yeah.
They had five guys that ended up going to the pros.
Yeah.
So they were a terrific team. But they didn't have Bob Lanier. And I will say that at that time, we were playing our best basketball, which is when you want to be playing your best basketball.
Yep.
If you go back to the UCLA Jacksonville final, that was like a 2-point game at the half.
Wow.
And I don't think, you know, Sidney Wicks or Steve Patterson or Curtis Rowe could have stopped Bob. Bob would have gotten them in foul trouble, and then we would have won. Would it have been a close game? No question about it. They were terrific. But I believe at that point in time, there was not a team in the country that could have beaten us.
Lanier, of course, is the big name, and he goes on to have a Hall of Fame career and be a dominant NBA player. But who are some of the other key players in that stretch of those few years in this Team of Distinction era? Who are some of the other key players?
Well, you know, you go back to the 67-68 team. That was the Iron Man 5 group with John Hayes, Bill Butler, Bob, Billy Calabaugh, and Jim Sadlin. I played with all those guys except Billy Butler because I was a freshman during that particular year. Billy Butler was a terrific player. And as a matter of fact, I'm going to make a point because I listened to an interview just the other day, actually, from Bill Walton, and he was talking about John Wooden, where John Wooden would try to get superstars, and then he would put complimentary players around him. I think to a lesser degree, Larry Weese did the same thing.
Yeah.
We were all good players, but everybody knew who the stars were. First it was George Carter, then it was Bill Butler, then it was Bob Lanier. So, but Billy made the team go. For those 3 years that he was the point guard, he made that team go because he was the man with the ball all the time. So he was terrific. That 67-68 team, all five of those guys were terrific. John Hayes played his role. Bill Butler was a fantastic player. For a 6'3", 6'4", forward, he was terrific. And then, of course, there was Jim Sadlin, who was the opposite guard. He was more the shooting guard, while Billy was more the point guard. And Jimmy, in his own right, was a terrific player. Great shooter, good defender, And, you know, then you go to the following year, which was the Final Four year, and we brought in, you know, we brought up myself, Greg Gary was a terrific forward. Then you had some sophomores that came in. Paul Hoffman, who started for us, terrific player. Matt Gant, whose leaping ability was that of a 6'9 guy. So he was 6'5, but he played like he was 6'9. So those were the guys that, you know, were terrific players in their own right. And, you know, on any given day, any of those guys, any of them could have scored 20 points. Mm. But Bob was the main guy.
In today's game, if a team averaged 86 points today, it would be considered really good. Without a three-point line and with without a shot clock, because now I'm thinking about like North Carolina's four corners and the stall, and I think they had a game with Duke when it was in, like, I don't even know, it was like 9-8 at halftime. Doesn't matter. Anyway, my point is, how do you score 86 points a game in the late 60s with no three-point shot and no shot clock?
You know, that's a very good question. First of all, you got to be pretty good shooters. Yeah, and secondly, you're somewhat dependent upon the other team.
Yeah,
because if the other team slows it down, you're not going to score 86 points a game.
Right, you'll have less possessions.
Far less possessions. So I think part of it was the way the game was played then was more at a up-tempo, fast-paced, you get an open shot, take the shot kind of possession. You know, each possession was like that. You rarely had teams slow it down. We actually had a huge advantage in, you know, the only team that slowed it down against us was Seton Hall. And then when we played, though, down in the Final Four, the East Regional, we played North Carolina State because they slowed it down against University of South Carolina, which was undefeated and beat the University of South Carolina. So it did happen, but the teams that we've played pretty much in and out didn't play that way. They didn't slow it down. I mean, they looked for good shots, took possessions, but if they... You know, they played at an up-tempo, Niagara, you know, with Calvin. They played an up-tempo offense.
Well, listen, congratulations, by the way, 10 years later on you getting into the Hall of Fame, but also on being on the Team of Distinction as well. I'm sure it's going to be a great time for you and the former teammates and everybody still connected with the team. So I appreciate you coming on and sharing some stories with us this morning, Dale.
Well, it's my pleasure. I could go on for an hour if you wanted.
Well, I won't mind, but the guy who does Sports Saturday at 11 o'clock, he might be angry. So we'll have to save it for another day.
We'll do that.
Thank you for your time, Dale. Yeah, you have a nice weekend.
Thank you.
That's pretty cool.
Too.
I wasn't here for the heyday of the Little Three. I wish I was. I mean, Bob Lanier down at Bonner. I mean, Canisius had great teams, and Calvin Murphy playing at Niagara just had to be. I've heard stories over the years from everybody who was here at the time, and then just had to be an amazing time for college basketball here. All right, when we get back, we're actually going to re-air an interview we did with Rob Gronkowski. Yes, Gronk is in this year's class, and you'll hear that interview when we return on WGR.
Now back to the Greater Buffalo Sports Hall of Fame Inductee Spotlight Show, presented by David Adams Card World, Canal Bank, and Osaic Wealth. Once again, here's Howard Simon.
Class of 2024 does include Rob Gronkowski, and he was on with us a couple weeks ago. We thought it'd be kind of cool to play back the interview since he is the big name in the class that is going in. We started our discussion on the honor that he is getting with this Hall of Fame, knowing that there's another Hall of Fame down the road, probably happening in his first year on the ballot in Canton, Ohio, and thought, hey, you know, you're going into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. What about the Buffalo Sports Hall of Fame?
It's big. You know, you definitely never want to forget where you grew up. I just want to thank all my coaches, all my, you know, friends as well that got me to where I needed to get to in the sports world. My parents especially, my dad just working hard to put food on the table for us, and my mom, well, she had five of us. My parents had five boys, so they were running all over the place, making sure we were at every practice, every game that we needed to be at. My mom made sure we were fed week in and week out, 24/7 as well, day in and day out. So just a huge shout out to my parents, just putting me in every league, making sure I was where I needed to be every single day. Shout out to all my teachers as well in the Williamsville community. I gave everyone a hard time, that's for sure. So I apologize for that. I am sorry for giving you all a hard time, but it's such an honor to be going into the Buffalo Hall of Fame. This is where my roots are. This is where I grew up. My family, like I said, my friends, huge shout out to all my friends from hockey to baseball to basketball to football. Buffalo is where it all started, Howard.
So you're obviously known for football. Did you play in other sports when you were growing up?
Yes, I'm a big believer in playing all the sports growing up. You learn the skills of other sports, and it translates to other sports as well that you really want to focus on. So kids, play as many sports as you possibly can, then focus on one as you get older and when you really want to know what sport you want to play if you are an athlete. But I played hockey growing up. That was actually my favorite sport.
Wow.
And then basketball was my favorite sport in high school, that's for sure. We had the Green Squall at our high school, Williamsville North, and they showed up every single game. It was just hectic and mayhem, which made it so much fun. And football, I always knew I was going to be a football player. I have the size, the ideal size to be a football player. I always knew that, the ideal, athleticism and strength to be a football player. But loved playing football in high school as well. And another sport, baseball was cool, but I started sucking at baseball when I was a junior in high school. So it wasn't as cool as it was, growing up and playing in the Little League system.
Yeah, it's hard to hit a baseball. Growing up in your house, I've read stories over the years about, you and your brothers and your dad and the competitiveness of the Gronkowski clan. What was it like growing up in that house?
It was mayhem, and I would have never changed a thing growing up in my house. My dad had a rule, just no hitting in the face or no hitting in the nuts, which makes a lot of sense. I mean,
it's a good rule. Yeah.
You got to protect that face, and you got to protect those, gonads. So very, very solid rules. My mom, she just let us go. She used to break up the fights, and get in between everyone. But then she just let us go. She goes, just tire yourself out. Hit each other as much as you want. It was just the best time of my life. And I swear, I contribute my childhood growing up. I contribute what got me to where I got to in the NFL because of my childhood. I mean, I was taking a beating from my older brothers and their friends every single day growing up. And I swear when I got to the NFL, when I got to a college level, I couldn't feel those hits anymore because I was already taking those hits when I was 2 years old all the way till I was 14 years old just from my brothers and their friends.
Talking to Rob Gronkowski, he's in the class of 2024 for the Greater Buffalo Sports Hall of Fame. You touched on a moment ago, your size made you ideal for football. Was there a point whenever you were playing football somewhere along the line where you first had that thought, hey, I could turn this into a pro career?
Yes, definitely. And that was when I was at Williamsville North about my sophomore year when I was on the varsity team with my brother. And shout out to Coach Mike Mammoliti, our head coach. And I just felt like, football was my sport, I wouldn't say it was my funnest sport growing up in high school because, like I said, basketball was legit. We had the Green Squall. We had the fan base, showing up. Basketball was the funnest to play in high school. But football, I always knew I was going to be playing in college and possibly in the NFL. And I just felt like I stacked up properly at the tight end position. I was already scouting, college tight ends when I was in high school. I was scouting NFL tight ends in high school, and I was already their size. So I just knew if I kept working on my strength, kept working on my speed, I could get to that level. And just my mentality, too, I just felt like football was definitely, the right sport for me. And I wanted to make it to the NFL. I loved playing the other sports, but I knew the NFL was calling my name.
I tried to put off the Patriots questions as long as I could. Sorry, Bills fans. But you get to New England. You play for a legendary coach. What was it like playing for Bill Belichick?
Yeah, it was great, man. I'm so glad I went to New England. I would not change a thing. The Buffalo Bills passed on me twice in the draft that year. I even told the Bills, I need to come home. I need to come home to Buffalo. But, it just wasn't meant to be, which is understandable. And I was a Bills fan growing up. I wasn't a Bills fan when I got to New England. Now I'm a Bills fan again, so it's all good. And just playing for Coach Belichick, I loved every moment of it. It was definitely tough in some situations, but just playing for him, you learn the game of football like no other. I mean, he's the best coach of all times. His football knowledge is incredible. He got you situated in the best position possible to win every single week as well. And that's what made him so great, is that he got his players prepared, in every aspect of the game. And, you couldn't ask for anything more from a coach. Yeah, you know, do that, all the tough parts, you know, having curfew, making sure you're showing up to practice every day. No one gets off. No veterans gets off. That's part of the whole program. I'm glad I was a part of it because it got me right. And it was a wonderful place where I landed. And we won Super Bowls, and that's all that matters.
From your coach to your quarterback, I mean, you obviously know him better than most people. So what, whether it was how he practiced, how he played, everything you saw that went into Tom Brady being Tom Brady, what made him so, well, one of the greatest, if not the greatest quarterback of all time?
Well, it's very similar to Coach Belichick as well, and that's why we were winning championships every single year. And that's why we are in the contention of winning a Super Bowl every single year that I was in New England, because it started from the top, actually, with Mr. Robert Kraft. I mean, the guy was all in with the New England Patriots as well. He wanted a winning team. He wanted to do whatever it took to have a winning team, and he wanted this team in the public eye doing great things as well in the community. So it starts there, and he was all in. And then you have the coach, Coach Belichick. He was all in, and we just talked about him getting players ready week in and week out, you know, so they know what to do when it comes down to game time. And then you have Tom Brady, who's at the very top as well, you know, in the game of football, you know, in preparation and preparing for the game on the practice field and off the practice field in the meeting room, and just showing up week in and week out, every single practice, every single game with his leadership. So you have just those dominant three that are at the top that are working day in and day out continuously and just leading by example. And then you got guys like myself that are, you know, going out there every single day and you know, hopping on the train and doing everything that we need to do to win. You got guys like Julian Edelman, Danny Amendola on the defense side, guys like Devin McCourty, they're showing up. Vince Wilfork, they're showing up every day and doing everything that they got to do to win games. And that's why we had a championship team and a contention for the Super Bowl year in and year out. A
couple of things left here, Rob, and I don't know, this one might be like asking a parent who their favorite child is, but of all your Super Bowl victories, is there one that is your favorite or stands out for any particular reason?
I definitely would say my very first Super Bowl, because it got me into the Super Bowl club. It was one of the best Super Bowl games of all time when we beat the Seattle Seahawks in 2015. You know, we were down, we came back, we were up, Seattle came back, they got up, and then we took the lead at the end of the game with about 3 minutes left, and then Russell Wilson, they just went right down the field, and then Malcolm Butler with the game-sealing interception at the two-yard line. So it was overall one of the best Super Bowls that have ever been played in Super Bowl history. And on top of it, it got me into the Super Bowl club. I scored a touchdown that game on the final two-minute drive in the first half, which was just incredible to score my first, you know, touchdown in the Super Bowl. It was surreal. And also to have it done, you know, in Arizona. And I went to college at the University mm-hmm. of Arizona. So it's kind of like my hometown, you know, while I was there playing, you know, in Arizona for the Super Bowl. So just overall, man, that's the best Super Bowl in my book that I have.
I have my final question is something I bet there's no way you expected me to get to, but I want to do this. I'm a huge Family Guy fan. So you get on Family Guy and you, right? It was you voicing your character, right? What was that experience like for you?
That was really cool. You just go to a studio and you just do voiceovers and you just act like yourself. And it's funny because you're like off camera. It's just your voice, but you're kind of like playing the role and like acting it all out with your body, but no one can even see you. And all they can hear is your voice anyway. So, it was very cool, you know, being able to do that. Family Guy, you know, a classic show on TV, been watching it for a long time. And when I had that opportunity to have an episode about, you know, my family and I, they hit it out of the park. It was hilarious. People were hitting me up the whole, you know, next week after that show saying they saw it and how funny it was. And they did a great job. Family Guy, you know, is one of the classic shows out there.
I take it you did at some point watch the whole episode, right?
Yes, I watched the whole episode. Well, for sure. It's 30 minutes long only. Of course I watched it all.
I didn't know if that's one of those things where you don't want to see, you know, hear your own voice or see. Anyway, it was done really well. So listen.
No, I know what you mean, but Family Guy, I was definitely hearing my own voice for sure with that one.
All right, Rob Gronkowski, a member of the Hall of Fame class of 2024. We'll come back and one more time get you all the ticket information and silent auction information. And then Derek Kramer standing by for Sports Saturday at the top of the hour on WGR. So before we head out, this is our final in the series of induction shows for the class of 2024. The event is again Tuesday, November 12th at the Buffalo Niagara Convention Center downtown. So it is 24 days away. It's always well attended. I do not want you to miss out on tickets. Maybe you want to see Gronk go in. Maybe you want to hear about Paul Whelan. Maybe you want to be there for whoever. Rick Lancelotti, all the different guests that are going in. You can purchase your tickets by going to gbshof.com. You have the option to purchase an individual ticket. You can also purchase a table. You can also make a donation to the all-important Amateur Sports Development Fund. Again, that's all at gbshof.com. You can also bid on an item or items in the silent auction. Too numerous to go into, but so many different items, various sports, but there's also music. There's a trip to Waikiki. There are non-sports items available. So again, the silent auction is going on. You can place your bid as well as buy the tickets to the dinner at gbshof.com. I want to thank Tom Burns from the Greater Buffalo Sports Hall of Fame for all his work, his hard work in making these shows very easy for me to do. Speaking of making the shows easy for me to do, Evan DePasquale produced all four of the Greater Buffalo Sports Hall of Fame shows. Coming up next, the one show, the only show on this radio station that actually makes our program director, Alan Davis, afraid. It is Derek Kramer and Sports Saturday. Derek is why they created delay in radio. He's on the way in a moment on WGR.